Tom Woods Show, episode 1572.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, the 2020 Contra Cruise promises to be the best one ever. Not only are we being joined by Dave Smith and Scott Horton, not only is there going to be a roast of Dave Smith, but we're also going to be joined by Phil Labonte, vocalist for the band All That Remains. Get the details and book your cabin at ContraCruise.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I got a few things I want to riff on today that I guess probably have a common theme, so maybe it will seem like one consistent line of discussion here. But I want to start off by saying a little something about what we saw the other day in the most recent Project Veritas clip. This is James O'Keefe's organization, and he's got a Bernie Sanders field organizer saying some rather provocative things. And let me just share with you what those are, and then I'll deal with the, hey, it's just one guy, and you know, what are you doing taking this out of context, or not out of context, but we wouldn't think it was fair if in the Ron Paul campaign they found one crazy person and then tried to tar everybody as being crazy. I mean, I'm sensitive to that concern, certainly. But let's see the sorts of things that were said. If you look at the video, and maybe I'll try and link to the video on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1572. The gist of it basically is this, that first of all, if Bernie does not get the nomination in Milwaukee at the Democratic convention, Milwaukee will burn and other cities will probably burn. Now, again, just try and think, try and imagine. Let's see if there's a double standard here or not. Imagine there's a Trump field coordinator who says, if Trump doesn't get the nomination or if Trump isn't reelected, cities will burn. Well, of course, we'd all be told, well, of course, what would you expect Nazis to say? Nazis want to burn cities. But it's okay if you're a leftist and cities burn because you at least want the cities to burn for righteous reasons or something. And incidentally, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but there is somebody in the Libertarian Party of Nevada who says, I'll just flat out come out and say it. The USSR was not evil. They were wrong, but not evil. They were wrong in good faith. So imagine all the people in the gulags being told, well, the people imprisoning you were wrong in good faith. So this idea that the left is basically righteous, so even if it goes a little bit overboard, at least it's doing so from a good place. Now imagine living in 2020 America and thinking that. And there is actually a contingent of people on the fringes of the Libertarian Party, particularly in Nevada, who believe things like that. You know, and they openly state them, and they're not in any way ashamed after what so many people endured in those regimes. I mean, imagine how laughable that is to think, well, their intentions were good. So, just crazy. So likewise here, we've got a guy predicting and obviously calling for violence. And media couldn't be less interested. It's almost like there's a double standard of some kind here. So he went on to say that we may have to re-educate a big portion of the population. So do you think even some of these MAGA people could be re-educated? The journalist asks him. And he says, I mean, we got to try. And then he compares it to after Nazi Germany, having to re-educate people not to be Nazis. So again, the idea is that about half of Americans are probably Nazis. And the interesting thing about that, of course, would be that young kids in America who know no history are more or less going to conclude that I guess Nazis are people who sometimes say obnoxious things and don't support free trade and want to cut down on immigration. Like, that's probably what they're going to think, because it to throw that word around like that, but that's the MO of these sorts of people. And he says, this is really what Bernie's saying with his free education. It's free education so we can teach you how to not be a blankety-blank Nazi, he says. And he says the gulags were primarily for re-education. He says, there's a reason Joseph Stalin had gulags, right? Actually, gulags were a lot better than what the CIA has told us that they were. Like, people were actually paid a living wage in gulags. They had conjugal visits in gulags. Gulags were actually meant for, like, re-education. Those are his exact words. And then he says, greatest way to breaking a blankety-blank millionaire of their privilege and the idea that they're superior, go out and break rocks for 12 hours a day. You're now a working-class person, and you're going to blankety-blank learn what that means, right? So this type of language, and he goes on to say that he's a very far leftist, way farther out there than the Democratic Socialists. So there are a lot of us in the Bernie campaign, and all over Twitter you can see higher-ups in the Bernie campaign saying he's great. Then as soon as this came out, in Iowa, all the major people in the Iowa campaign locked down their Twitter accounts so that journalists couldn't go back and look at their tweets. So, yeah, so that's what makes me think this isn't just an isolated person, as it obviously would be in the Ron Paul campaign, because the difference there is that Bernie Sanders himself went and visited oppressive regimes and then came back and said great things about them. I mean, he gave a press conference about his trip to the USSR, and he's talking like some guy out of the Twilight Zone about, and they have very cheap entertainment. You know, for $1.50, you can go to a puppet show, whatever the heck it was. And that you would say that in the midst of the great totalitarian nightmare of the 20th century is astonishing. So yeah, if you have a field organizer who seems to be sympathetic with that, that doesn't seem anomalous. That's the thing. I mean, Ron Paul is the kindliest guy in the world, who could barely even bring himself to say, as president, I would... You never heard him even talk that way, because the idea of wielding power is so foreign to him, to think that he's got a secret, wicked plan against minorities or something. It would just be just almost like a mental illness of some kind. Whereas this seems to follow more or less precisely from Bernie's own remarks and Bernie's own behavior. Now, let me say, obviously, there are a lot of people on the left who don't think that half the country is Nazi, but an astonishingly large number of them believe this, which is pretty unhelpful. I don't think half the country is communist. I just don't. Even if they believe in redistribution, it takes a lot more than that to be a communist. So I don't go around making ridiculous statements like that. So I don't think there's any particular onus on us to make a special effort to appeal to people like that. That's wasted effort. I mean, not that it's absolutely impossible to convert any particular person. I mean, anything is metaphysically possible, I suppose. But you have to think of what's the best use of your energy and your resources. And trying to persuade people like that or package your message in a way that it makes people like that sympathetic is a fool's errand. It is an utter waste of time. Absolute waste of time. And I mention this because of something that happened the other day on Twitter. And I realize Twitter is the very embodiment of triviality half the time. But sometimes things happen there that illustrate larger themes. And I had something happen the other day there where I looked in on a conversation that was taking place. Somebody posted the following. Centralization had its day. Robust, decentralized, voluntary solutions are the only way to a more prosperous and caring society. Well, I don't think, how is that even debatable? Of course, well, that's what we want. And we did a great episode about this topic on Jeff Deist Week of the Tom Woods Show, episodes 1563 through 67, for elaboration on that. And I still recall the old days when at least some people on the left used to say, small is beautiful. Right, by which they often meant, you know, not mega corporations, but small things and small this and that. But that's long gone. Small is beautiful. That's long gone. Now it's small is evil and stupid and backward. And gigantic and unresponsive is what we want. So this guy says this thing about centralization, how it would be better for us to, you know, be operating in smaller units. You know, it's more humane and face to face and so on with other human beings. And the response he got from some random person was, libertarianism is just white supremacy. So he has this insight about centralization, which is something nobody talks about. The right wing doesn't talk about it. The left wing doesn't talk about it. It's nowhere to be found in mainstream political discussion. It obviously needs to be heard. It's a fresh idea. The two sides, the so-called left and the so-called right, are both arguing about how best to implement centralization and who should be in charge of centralization and who should be centrally planning society. And now you have one guy who says, you know, maybe that whole project ought to be abandoned. And instead of saying, wow, at least here's a fresh idea that's a little bit different from what I hear from Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden. You know, well, how refreshing. I may not agree with it, but at least it's something off the officially approved list of topics that the New York Times has given us. You'd think you could at least get that. Nope. Nope. You get something that's not even on topic. You get libertarianism is just white supremacy. I don't know what that means. Libertarianism has nothing to do with supremacy of anybody. It just says nobody can initiate aggression against anybody else. That's all it says. And then the way I would put it is this. Think about Ron Paul's presidential campaigns. If you had to narrow down his message to three things that he was opposing, one would be war, one would be central banking, and one would be the war on drugs. Each one of these things, in my opinion, disproportionately harms non-whites. So some white supremacist Ron Paul is. I mean, the war on drugs more or less speaks for itself. Central banking, well, I think the Cantillon effects of the inflation of the money supply tend to hurt people with the fewest resources, not to mention the boom-bust cycle, you know, is going to hurt a working person who doesn't have a lot of savings to back him up while he's looking for another job disproportionately, not to mention what it did to the housing market and so on. And war, I think it's a lot of times it's minority communities that get snookered into these wars and they do a lot of damage to people. So that's how I would have responded. If somebody said in response to a very insightful tweet, instead of engaging with that and saying, how refreshing, finally, a fresh idea. No, nope, that's white supremacy. I mean, first of all, I probably would have ignored that person because what an absolute waste of time to do that. But I think I probably would have responded with the Ron Paul point I just made. Well, here's how a Libertarian Party chapter out of Nevada responded. So instead of saying, look, there was nothing wrong with that tweet. Obviously, we don't need more. The last thing in the world we need is more centralization. Look at the unbelievable damage centralized states did to mankind in the 20th century. Who in the world is still defending them? And for heaven's sake, they weren't particularly friendly to racial minorities. Look at the record of centralized states around the world and how they were toward racial minorities. I mean, what self-declared defender of racial minorities can be a defender of the centralized state? You know, that would be the sort of thing a normal person would say. Instead, this chapter of the Libertarian Party of Nevada responded this way, basically accepting the criticism, more or less. Sure, if you buy the Hans Hoppe, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul type of paleocon, that's not libertarianism. Oh my gosh, I don't know what to say. Well, let's take this apart. First of all, there is no chance whatsoever that the person saying libertarianism is just white supremacy, there is no chance that person knows who Hans Hoppe is. No chance whatsoever. There is no chance that person knows who Murray Rothbard is. Most people I come across who criticize libertarianism don't know the first thing about it, and they think the only books we read are Ayn Rand. You notice that? Now, Ayn Rand has her merits and her place, but you notice I almost never mention her. She almost never comes up. But yet, if you read Salon or Slate, they think that's all we do is sit around reading Ayn Rand novels, because that's what most of the left thinks. You and I know very, very well and intimately what the left believes. They have no idea what we believe, that what they think we believe is a ridiculous comic book caricature. So the idea that they actually know who Hans Hoppe is, come on. So there's this fantasy out there that, well, Rothbard and Hoppe are causing all these public relations problems. Nobody even knows who Rothbard and Hoppe are. So even if that were true, it's irrelevant. Secondly, notice they throw Ron Paul in there. Like, that's not libertarianism. And yeah, if you think about Ron Paul, then that would be white supremacy. Imagine having that kind of mental defect that you think Ron Paul is a white supremacist. Here we have the one guy in Congress who consistently voted against bombing non-whites and who, I think, practically alone spoke out not just about the loss of the lives of U.S. soldiers, but also about foreigners losing their lives in faraway lands. He's the white supremacist? Again, he must be the worst. This is further reason. He must be the worst white supremacist who ever lived, the most unsuccessful one, and the most uncoordinated one, because everything he's doing helps people who are non-white. And what we also get through a tweet like that is this sense that the left is acting in good faith. And if we just meet them halfway and say, yeah, you know, there is, I can understand why you might think libertarianism is white supremacy. That if we just explain to them that our leftist version of libertarianism is the real thing, then surely they won't dismiss us also as white supremacists. They'll say, oh, you're not white supremacists, just these certain libertarians. They think that's going to happen. And that is so sweet and quaint, isn't it? I mean, like, it almost makes you laugh. They think that if they just separate themselves from radical libertarians like us, the principled ones, that they'll be spared, you know, that the left will like them. The left has no interest in these people whatsoever, holds them in contempt. Well, I mean, remember, the left wing thinks Bob Dole equals Pat Buchanan equals Donald Trump equals Newt Gingrich equals who else? Michael Malice, maybe, if they knew who Michael Malice was. These are not people known for making distinctions. Lincoln Chafee, Gary Johnson, these are all the same person to the left. These are not people known for careful distinctions. And these cowards in this branch of the Libertarian Party think that in this one exception, this one case, the left will make subtle distinctions. They think the left will make subtle distinctions in this one case. Not going to happen. Absolutely not going to happen. As soon as you say, you know, I'm not so sure Obamacare is a good idea, they're going to call you a fascist because they think capitalism is fascism. Well, if we sound like leftists and we echo their talking points and we use their language and we share their concerns and we become hysterical people who think everybody's a racist and whatever, then maybe they'll like us. Nope, that is absolutely not going to happen. And that is a 100% guarantee that is not going to happen. That tweet about centralization was correct and it should simply have been defended. Instead, these cowards begged some nobody not to call them white supremacists and then threw under the bus a huge, huge wing of, I mean, almost like not even a wing, like the movement itself they threw under the bus. Because you look at when you go outward from Rothbard and Ron Paul, it basically winds up bringing in everybody. I mean, what now, Gene Epstein? What, Gene Epstein's a white supremacist? Come on. And you look at all these people, Robert Higgs, the great economic historian everybody in every wing of libertarianism loves, and he says, support the Mises Institute. It's the only one doing this kind of work, and everybody's got to rally to it. So now he's a white supremacist. I mean, Ralph Rako was a white supremacist who was in the Circle Bastiat. George Reisman, one of the great objectivists. At some point, when you start to say all these people are demons, then you're basically saying the whole libertarian movement is a demon, in which case you have to give up. You have to give up. You have to say, if this many people in the movement are white supremacists, and if Woods wins the freaking Hayek Lifetime Achievement Award while being a whatever they think I am, then you have to, at that point, say the libertarian movement is lost. So, in other words, there are two possibilities. The libertarian movement is lost, or we have unjustly accused people of things, that we are becoming crazy leftist hysterics, and we're unjustly, well, since they'll never consider that, then why don't they just give up? I don't understand why they persist in the libertarian movement. If so many libertarians, and prominent ones too, prominent ones, support and love Ron Paul, and for that matter, your host here. All right, let's take a quick break right now and say a quick word about our sponsor for this episode, and that is Skillshare. Skillshare is an amazing online learning community that is offering our listeners 2 months of free premium membership. It's like the Netflix of online learning. One membership gets you access to thousands and thousands of classes in topics ranging from illustration to design to photography, video, freelancing, entrepreneurship, business, and more. And when you look through the specifics at Skillshare, you find so many gems. Like, for example, I have to admit, I'm rather intrigued by one of their most popular classes these days, how to make dope low-budget films. Now, come on, some of you want to do that. The nice thing about Skillshare is it offers classes designed for real life. These are not classes that go on for 12 weeks, meeting 3 hours a day. These are short, micro-classes that get right to the point and teach you just what you need to know. And that way you can move your creative journey forward without having to put your whole life on hold. You're going to create real projects and get the support of all your fellow creatives out there so you can achieve real growth. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/Woods, where Tom Woods Show listeners get 2 free months of premium membership. That's 2 months free at Skillshare.com/Woods. All right, now before we finish up for today, let me wrap up with a little commentary about what's been going on with deplatforming, because there is some difference of opinion in the libertarian world here. And I'm not dogmatic on this because obviously this is an area where there can be legitimate difference of opinion. You know, obviously outright murder, we can't have a difference of opinion on that. But on this, I think it's a partly strategic question. It's a long-term, I think it's very short-sighted to favor deplatforming of people you don't like and people you think are wicked. I think that's very short-sighted. I understand the arguments for it, but I think they're all very short-sighted and they completely miss the big picture. I think they're uttered completely cluelessly. And I would urge people to at least to rethink that. And as I say, it's possible I'm wrong on this. It's possible I'm wrong. I don't think I am. But I do want people at least to rethink it. And then maybe it turns out you do have good grounds for what you're saying. I shouldn't have said cluelessly. That's not nice. Some of the people who disagree with me are very smart people. So I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, the other day, Stefan Molyneux was dropped from his email autoresponder service after somebody on Twitter tweeted at that service and said, hey, do you know this crazy extremist is on your platform? And they tweeted this out late at night. And then like all through the night, like in the wee hours of the morning, they were saying, well, have you gotten rid of him yet? Have you gotten rid of him yet? I mean, just like, whoa. I mean, we're sleeping. Just unbelievable. So they said, yeah, we canceled his account. So just like that. So I commented on that on Twitter because this whole deplatforming thing, obviously we've heard it happen to Alex Jones. We've heard about the demonetization on YouTube of Steven Crowder. And people say, oh, these people, they're rude and they had it coming to them and they deserve this and that. Okay, well, all right, fine. And I'll get to their private company thing in a minute. We all know that. We've heard that a million times. But this is a very blunt instrument because it also involved removing Daniel McAdams from Twitter. He's been on the show a number of times. And Peter Van Buren, formerly of the State Department, who's been on the show before also. They were both removed from Twitter in a example of deplatforming and removed on the most preposterous grounds imaginable. So the question then arises, how should libertarians think about this? Well, I protested what happened to Stefan Molyneux. And so I knew what was going to happen. I knew what's going to happen. Like I don't have enough stuff to deal with on my own. Now I have all of Stefan Molyneux's baggage, right? You know, because I said I don't think he should be deplatformed. Because if it were my company, I wouldn't do that. And I wouldn't do it to communists either. And that doesn't mean I support every single word that's ever come out of the mouth of Stefan Molyneux any more than it means that I support the 100 million deaths the communists are responsible for if I would also let them use my service. It doesn't mean any of that. But of course, the second I opened my mouth about this, the loser brigade was at it. Aha! This goes to show, right, you know, about Woods. He's a terrible person. All right. Well, I knew that wasn't going to make me any friends, but I don't want to be friends with crazy people, so I'm perfectly okay with it. And then what I started getting was, well, these are private companies. They can do what they want. Oh, my gosh. I know that. I know that. We all know that. That is so not helpful to say. We already know that. I'm criticizing a private company because I'm allowed to do that because of freedom. I can criticize a private company. I don't know why some libertarians think you can't. Left libertarians in particular, it's so funny. They're anti-corporation, but then suddenly you can't criticize this corporation. I mean, like, what? Will you stick to a position? And anyway, yes, you can criticize companies. You absolutely can. The same way, I'm pretty sure these left libertarians probably would have criticized Woolworths for having segregated lunch counters. I bet they would have criticized that private company. So it does not end the argument to say, well, they're a private company. This is the free market at work. One decision by one company is not the free market. It's one decision by one company. And you can criticize that one decision by one company. Gene Callahan said on Twitter that if we really were helpless to protest any decision ever made by a business, then we would be betraying capitalism every time we leave a negative product review. This is ridiculous. Now, I know you can argue that they're not really private or whatever, but I don't even want to get into that because that's not necessary. I want to stick to just the principle of the thing. The people who are attacking me for opposing deplatforming have never in their lives taken a position that would get them in genuine trouble with prevailing opinion. They have no idea what that would be like, and being cowards, they have no intention of finding out. They relish being the thought controllers. They relish assuring everybody that their own thoughts are exquisitely correct and have never deviated from the regime's priorities. Well, that is not me. I would never want to be that person. So again, I don't even think communists should be deplatformed, even though unlike the right-wingers who have been deplatformed, the communists actually are responsible for deaths and made excuses for or covered up deaths all through the 20th century. I think even those people should be allowed to use it. Now, notice, no left libertarian will criticize me for that. Absolutely not. They will never, ever criticize me for being too soft on communism. That will not happen. Because the communists, remember, were acting in good faith. Right? They may have been wrong, but they were wrong in good faith. My thought is that the reason you need to think long-term here and not just the immediate gratification of, oh, we got that bad guy. We got that bad guy. Couple things here. First of all, it reinforces the regime's moral priorities. And you should not get your moral compass from the U.S. regime. The U.S. regime tells you that somebody like a Molyneux or an Alex Jones is a bigger danger than John McCain was. But that really isn't true. I don't believe any of those people have been responsible for any deaths, and I believe they've spoken out against the U.S. war machine. That's better than I can say for almost the entire American political establishment. So it then becomes necessary for the regime to warp our moral sense and get us to think these people are admirable, wonderful statesmen and people who are well outside the 3x5 card of allowable opinion. They are the dangerous ones, even though they've never, ever advocated violence, even once. Never. Now, again, I don't even know half the things. I don't know really anything Alex Jones ever said. I don't listen to him. I almost never have. Only a couple times when people say this interview was interesting. I have no idea what he says. I just feel like if we start down this road of that's a bad guy, let's purge him. Well, we're living in a society where there's a radical difference of opinion, where we are deeply divided. I don't think we do agree on who all the bad people are. Now, I know you may say, but Woods, there are some people who are so bad, we all agree. Yeah, but then that becomes a slippery slope because we all agree this one's bad. Do we agree this one's bad? How about this one? How about this one? How about this one? How about this one? Are you sure there's enough common moral ground among these people that we can all agree? And is it really a great idea to say, let's purge people from the conversation, just purge them? Like Daniel McAdams, I mean, I'm sorry, every time you take out and Alex Jones, you are also going to take out a Daniel McAdams because it is a blunt instrument. It is not a scalpel. And is that good? Is the world better because Daniel McAdams has a harder time spreading the message of peace in the world? Is that better? Are you happier about the world? In a culture where everybody is accused of racism or more preposterously still white supremacy, if you can use that expression with a straight face in 2020, I don't know what to say. In that kind of culture, it makes perfect sense for a libertarian not to want to jump on this demonization bandwagon. Because here we are living in a society that thinks capitalism is Nazism. I don't think in that society in particular, you ought to be cheering the deplatforming of extremists because you're next. I mean, gee, how could that strategy backfire? You also are considered an extremist by these people, all right? You are considered an extremist. I personally feel like the best approach is just to argue things out. Just to fight them out. I don't particularly worry that I'm going to come out second best in a debate with communists. And I don't particularly want to be saying, well, we're going to ban them. And then when they get in charge, they're going to ban us. I would much rather, I think it's much, much safer in the long run for the overall cause of free speech, for people to become accustomed to the idea that people they disagree with are going to say things. Because otherwise, it seems normal to people that yep, this class of people should be shut up. So then there's a switch in power. We think it's normal that another class should be shut up. What if we instead just think it's normal that, you know, people should say what they want to say? And you're not going to like some of the things they want to say. But the way I put it in my email newsletter is it's not the role of a social media platform or an email autoresponder service or a payment processor to be your mother. You already have a mother. And if you're eager for her advice on what you should read or what you should look at, she's a phone call away. This whole burn the heretic thing is just very unbecoming coming from libertarians. And, you know, I know that there are some libertarians who want to assure the world that they are good, wonderful people who would never, ever have a racist thought. And by the way, isn't it weird? I am not saying these people are the real racists. I would never in a million years say that because it's a stupid argument. But it is weird that when people object to homosexuality strongly and over and over and over and over, there's a strong suspicion they're hiding something, right? We hear this all the time. They must be closeted, or why else would they be constantly assuring us of where they stand on homosexuality? How come we don't apply that standard to people who every single day tell us they're not racists? Every single day they're telling us they're not racist. It's like, well, she's, okay, we get it. I mean, is everything okay over there? Like, you know, what's going on here? Now, have there been some libertarians who have said things that they shouldn't have said or that are bad things? Obviously. And I bet that has turned a relative handful of people off, given that most of the people we're talking about are absolutely unknown and have almost no reach. I don't think it had that sort of thing has very much effect whatsoever. However, we do have very prominent people in the libertarian world and party who are constantly doing the opposite, constantly saying totally predictable, boring things. You know, basically, I'm against cancer or whatever, you know, that kind of thing, reassuring everybody where they stand on issues where everybody agrees already anyway. And that hugely turns off people. I mean, just look at the comments on a lot of the tweets from the chairman of the Libertarian National Committee. They're all against him. Every single one is people saying, oh my gosh, why would I follow a movement that sounds like this? I mean, I can get this reading the Washington Post. Why in the world would I follow a movement like this? And why would I follow a movement that jumps on the same predictable bandwagon the New York Times and MSNBC jump on? That, hey, look at this heretic, go after him. Like, I already get plenty of it. I already get the heretic hunting from other sources. Why would I need it from the Libertarian Party? What are you here for? I already have people who hunt heretics. And what do we need you for? And these people have no good answer to that question. So to heck with that stuff, right? Let people be wrong and answer wrong arguments with right arguments. That is the mature, normal person way you handle people you disagree with. So yes, I'm not saying any company is forced to do anything. But if it were me, I would say it's not my job to be your parent. It's my job to provide a service, and provide a service I intend to do. It's the job of civil society to sort out arguments and who's right and who's wrong. And that is where we ought to be. And that's very far from where we are now. We live in a culture that thinks it's normal to shut down speakers on a college campus, to intimidate people, to ruin people's careers, to see libertarians or people who call themselves libertarians jumping in on that, taking part in that, and cheering that on is bizarre and utterly short-sighted, stupid, evil, cowardly. I don't know what else to say about it. So to heck with all of it. And if you think I'm right about this, I appreciate your support. If you think I'm wrong, I also appreciate your support. Because as I say, this is not dogmatic libertarian doctrine I'm talking about here. This is just strategic. This is a strategic question. But I do think I'm right. But come talk to me about it in my private group over in supportinglisteners.com, because you'll also warm my heart, because it's nice to know that folks out there are enjoying and appreciating what I'm doing. So head over to supportinglisteners.com, and I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.